Welcome back, readers and romance seekers, to Hopelessly Romantic Behind the Page. Well, I hope everyone is doing all right. I'll admit to being down, if I'm really honest. We've had a couple of heat waves here, I guess you might call them. This Florida girl can deal, but that doesn't mean it's not bad, because it is. Heat is hard on everyone. I know that, like, I don't like it, like, really lethargic, or I don't want to eat. The hot is just too much. But hopefully the heat doesn't last too long. And it might be a short episode for me today, for reasons I'll probably explain later. But first, we have to give Girls Before Earls one last gander. I'll start by saying that I did have a little bit of a hard time reading Girls Before Earls, much like I had when I was reading The Princess Plan last season. I don't know, maybe I'm just not down on the historical romances right now. I guess, well, the flavors of what I read, of what I want to read, that can shift occasionally. Like, I can go through, like, sections of, like, I want to read everything by this author, I want to read everything of this kind of book. And maybe right now historical, or at the very least Regency and Victorian, are just not on my menu at the moment. But that didn't really stop me from giving Girls Before Earls a fair shake. Oh, hi, Apollo. I tried to look at it as objectively as I possibly could, but it utilized some narrative tools that I just didn't jive with in general. Let's look at Lady Penelope, for instance. She is, for want of a better phrase, kind of a boring villain. Everything about her is drawn from cliché and tropes, and her, quote, comeuppance at the end was just the side of ridiculous. I will say, though, her type of character works well for the setting that she's placed in. This character would not have flown in any romance that takes place in the modern day. I mean, I would honestly be pretty pissed, actually, if I found her in something that took place in this year or whatever. I won't say that she's conniving, but she's certainly calculating. And we really don't get much of a reason as to why she was after Blade specifically. She doesn't seem to be the sentimental type. In fact, that's why Blade was courting her in the first place. She didn't really have an affection for Blade, at least as far as I could tell. And she also really had, like, a high standard of how she's perceived in public, I guess. And she's also mentioned that she's been turning away suitors, even a duke, because she had an understanding with Blade. So she's spoilt for choice, as it were. And I feel that, realistically, the moment that Blade shared his doubts with her, she would have been able to bounce back, as it appeared as though she was a demand as a match, like, you know, everybody was courting her. It's also possible that she was lying about turning down suitors, and that Blade was the only person who'd give her a second look. She was willing to forgo that love match in order to get the security that Blade was trying to provide. It could also simply be that all she wanted was security, but again, it appears that she had better options or offers. Maybe Blade happened to be richer than all of her other gentlemen callers, and that's all she cared about, you know, even more than the Duke. Really, I do wish we could have seen more of Penelope's motivations, but, and this is speculation here, that might be on purpose. To understand a character's motivations means that we might empathize with them and create an emotional connection. And we aren't supposed to have an emotional connection to our villain, only for our intended couple, are we? Personally, I find that to be a load of hogwash. A motivated character is a compelling character, and a compelling character drops us deeper into the story. Blade has his motivations, Hazel has her. It's only reasonable to expect Penelope to have her own as well. Basically, what I'm saying is, I wish we could have seen why Penelope was such a bitch. I'd like to hope that there aren't people who wake up in the morning thinking, gosh, how can I be the worst person I can be today? And I want the fiction that I read to reflect that worldview. Now, having said all of that, I loved giving her a voice. I know I probably laid it on thick, but I just couldn't help it. Her manipulation tactics were dripping from her dialogue, and I just followed suit. There's something about voicing villains that I just love. Playing villains in general is a blast. Maybe I'm just so much of a goody-two-shoes that letting out my inner Dr. Evil is a catharsis that just can't be denied. Half the reason I put Penelope's quote into the episode was because I wanted to get into her character. And, like, I even, you know, said it out loud a few times just to see if I really liked it. And I am wondering that maybe something else is going on here with Lady Penelope. I'm wondering if Lady Penelope wasn't inspired by someone the author knew, or at the very least was given influence as to how the character was written. Again, we have to look at her lack of stated motivation. And if we have a motivation, we can empathize. And having empathy is really difficult when it's someone who caused emotional or physical harm against you. Penelope isn't a one-dimensional character. She has purpose, personality, substance. We're just missing that one key look into her character that explains everything. And that, unfortunately, cuts into our ability to understand why she is such a thorn in Blade's side. Again, this is another reason why you can't really kill the author when you're examining media. There are things that happen to a person that, you know, express itself on the page. And then we've also got that out-of-nowhere nonsense at the summer ball, where Dunmire proposed to Penelope at the height of her humiliation. I have no idea how that was supposed to go, but maybe it kind of reads like a sort of catharsis for, like, you know, I wish the person who had hurt me had a very public humiliation. So we saw in the novel that Dunmire clearly believes his shit doesn't stink, and he thinks that he can offer Penelope better than what anything Blade had on the table. So not only is Penelope defeated, but she's embarrassed and humiliated all in one swoop. So I really feel there's a catharsis in there somewhere. And hey, I get it. I've written several inspired characters that got theirs. I mean, it's cheaper than therapy. As to that ending, though, we need to remember, if Dunmire hadn't swooped in, Blade would have been royally screwed. I mean, right up that creek without the proverbial paddle. And he would have had no one to blame but himself. Like I said, I was really unhappy with how he handled the courtship with the two women. It's like he knew he had an understanding with Penelope, but he was constantly pursuing a physical relationship with Hazel and blocking himself off emotionally when he knew that she was emotionally becoming invested. Like, I'm not a fan of Blade. Like, we've had worse guys on this podcast, but Blade is not. He doesn't really stand that high above them. But maybe at the end, he would have not as been as screwed as I feel like. It is Regency England, after all. He might easily be able to spin a tale of how Penelope was after him for only his money and hated how he doted on Hazel, so she cooked up this grand scheme, complete with a forged letter of proposal, and people would have believed him because he was a man and an earl. Sorry, I've been pretty bitter lately. Somehow, I didn't know what I would talk about when I sat down to write up the notes, and then I end up with almost 2 pages of notes on freaking Lady Penelope. I guess there was a bone to pick in there. But you know what? Let's have some fun. Just because I can, I'm going to get into a little compare and contrast. Y'all remember Legally Blonde? Of course you do. I love that movie. Love it, love it, love it. One of the reasons I love it is because it turns the female romantic rival trope on its head. So we have Elle Woods. She has the perfect life. She's in the perfect sorority, has the perfect family background, a perfect boyfriend, and even has the perfect attitude. She's delightfully optimistic about, well, everything, and she doesn't really take any disrespect. Like, she knows how to bounce back, and when she loses one piece of the puzzle that makes up her perfect life, she does everything in her power to go get it back. That perfect piece, of course, being her boyfriend. He dumps her on the night that she thinks he's going to propose, telling her that she's not serious enough for him. See, he wants to be a big fancy lawyer and then maybe a senator. And in his words, that means he has to marry a Jackie, not a Marilyn. Everyone in her life tells her that she's not a serious person. They don't say this to disparage her, well, maybe Warner, the boyfriend, does, but they suggest it as a clash of two different lifestyles. Warner has his eyes on politics, Elle has her eyes on the fashion industry. So in order to chase him and get him back, she applies to Harvard Law School and works hard to get in. One of my favorite quotes is when Warner asks Elle how she got into Harvard, she's like, "What? Like it's hard?" I love her. She protect her at all costs. So when she finally finds Warner at Harvard, she learns that he's gotten engaged to someone he knew back home, Vivian. Vivian is the interesting character her. here. At the start, they get into your typical catfight rom-com rivalry. And Vivian is portrayed as looking down on Elle, questioning her intelligence, making assumptions based only on Elle's appearance. She is pretty hard, if not nasty. And it's like, it's really difficult to kind of see her in a sympathetic light. But that's what makes Elle special, because Elle doesn't judge her necessarily for that as time goes on. Eventually, the two will get to know one another, and then they become best friends. Vivian dumps Warner for being an idiot, like self-serving idiot. Elle wants nothing to do with him by the end of the film, and they all live happily ever after, except Warner, because fuck Warner. In my opinion, Legally Blonde is the perfect film, and you cannot change my mind. I've got a thing for the redeemed villain, in my media. While Vivian isn't technically a villain, she is certainly an antagonist to Elle's goal. But they end up empathizing with one another and becoming friends. I very much prefer the Legally Blonde approach to the romantic rival. I would even prefer Pregnant with His Majesty's Heir approach. The two women there, while they might not have become best friends, they had an understanding of each other and were at least on friendly terms. It's important that we see women building up other women. While Vivian might have tried to cut Elle down at first, Elle still approached her with dignity and grace. And Elle's friends helped her study for the exam once she told them what it was that she wanted to do. Near the end, at the climax of the film, one of Elle's professors, another woman, said, "I didn't think you would quit. Otherwise, who knows what you'd be doing." So in our episode, I mentioned that Blade had a want versus need. This is something that we can see in a lot of media when it concerns character growth. What does the protagonist want, and what is it that they actually need? And it's often that they don't know what they need since they are so focused on the want. They confuse the two. For Blade, he needed to face his familial trauma, but wanted to escape his problems by marrying the first woman who would agree to deal with him and his niece. That's right, Hermes. He has come to tell me that he is hungry. But Hazel is more or less satisfied with where she was in her life. Her want was to grow her school, and her need was to let down her barriers and let people on the outside in. She did have a strong relationship with the women and girls in her life, thanks to her devotion to the school. I guess she needed a big, strong man, huh? Yeah, I'm not a fan of that trope either. Hazel knew what she was about. Her biggest obstacle was funding at the heart of it. She was scrimping and scrounging to make sure she could provide for the best education possible, making sure that her students had everything they needed and being able to collect as many students who could pay the tuition. And then here comes a wealthy earl to make all of her dreams come true. I don't like the implication that a woman needs a man to solve her problems. Does having a partner make life simpler? In some ways, sure. But one does not need a romantic partner to accomplish their goals. Hey, look, another reason I like Legally Blonde. Elle wants to get into Harvard so she can win her boyfriend back. That's what she wants. What she needs is to realize that she doesn't need Warner to give her a sense of fulfillment, finding it within herself and her own achievements. You know, now that I think about it, Legally Blonde was based on a book. Maybe I'll give it a read, finally. And here's the part of the show where I tell you that I haven't read anything at all. I've been distracted by the loss of my bodily autonomy. Yes, I realize that I am expressing this with the subtlety of a frying pan to the face, but I don't really care right now. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts in the meantime. Overly Sarcastic Productions, Opening Arguments, Sawbones, they've all been lifesavers, as it were. Oh, and Legally Blonde. I've been watching that a lot, if you couldn't tell. So, hopefully, I will catch you in better weather when we read Her Honorable Mercenary by Nicole Locke. Thank you for joining me, readers and romance seekers, and I hope to see you once again for Hopelessly Romantic. If you like the show, please visit us at hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. If you have questions or want to recommend a read, please email us at contact@hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. Also, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will go a long way to help the show, and I can keep bringing you lots of fun episodes. The show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster. Our technical advisor is Kwang Yin Cho. And Hopelessly Romantic is an H with K production. And it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.